listening to Dallas Theological Seminary's Chapel Podcast.
Been good to have the church planters, Aubrey Malfers. Dr. Malfers has been our point person for these chapels. And I want you today, the personnel have changed a little bit because some of the church planters had to go back to their churches to get ready for Sunday that were from long distances, and we understand that. Would you welcome today Aubrey Malfers and the panel as they take this chapel now on church planting?
Good morning, and thank you for being here. As you know, this has been our week for church planting, and I hope the speakers have been challenging to you. We've tried to bring them from different directions with different emphases, and that's all on, there's a purpose behind that. Today, we want to finish up this by having our group up here. We're going to address some issues in the area of church planting, take perhaps 10 or 15 minutes to do that. And then we're going to open it up to you for questions. So you see some mics there, and please don't be bashful. If you have a question, grab the mic and ask it. Some of you in the front, if you rather than ask it from there, if you go back there so everyone can hear what the question is. I'd like to introduce our panelists. On my left is Ryan O'Dowd. Ryan is a current student here at Dallas Seminary that's thinking about church planting, so I invited him to be on the panel. And he'll say a few words in just a few moments. On my right, far right, of course, is Lance Waldie, who spoke in chapel here on Wednesday and has been planting a church and is still planting a church in Houston. And then, of course, our own Michael Pocock. And Michael, thank you for being a part of this time today. Thought I would begin by talking about some opportunities in church planting here on campus, opportunities for you to learn about what's going on, to learn more about what's taking place in church planting. And to begin with, Ryan, would you talk a little bit about Conception and the group and what's taking place there?
Sure. What Conception is, and they're going to flash something behind me, but a couple of church planters just got together and realized that there's really no way for us to meet and get to know each other. We just kind of met on accident in class. And so we wanted to get together a group so we could come together. And the image we use on the website, if you go to that, it's conception@dts.com, is of a seed. And when a seed is underground, it receives nutrients, it receives vitamins, but it hasn't grown yet. And that's kind of the stage. We're all here at DTS. We're all trying to get what we need, and we're trying to connect. And so our vision for this, it's not really an official group. We just get together every once in a while. But our vision is to connect people so we can sharpen our vision so when we do plant, we can be more successful. We're trying to build the character of everyone who's going to plant. And there's also the possibility that people can meet each other and possibly becoming a part of a team in a plant. If we have two people that are looking at New York, why can't we get them together and send them to New York? If we have two people looking overseas and just to meet, throw ideas off each other. But really what we want to do is to raise awareness. And there's a lot of people that want to plant churches on campus, but we just don't know each other because there's no forum for that. And so what we have, if you go to the website, if you're interested at all, you can send us an email. We'll get you on our little email list, and we're going to meet a couple times each semester, talk about certain things. We might bring in some planters around the area to get them to help us out, but really we're just trying to raise this awareness and just to bounce ideas off each other, because we're really naive here, and we all know it, but we're trying to figure out what's it really going to look like when we get out and plant churches, because we all have these great visions. And we bounce them off each other. It challenges us and grows us. So that's pretty much what Conception is. The Conception idea came from his book. He talks about conception in a pregnancy and how that goes out to birth the church. So,
thank you, Ryan. Michael Pocock and I also teach classes in church planting. And usually in the spring, I'm teaching church planting this spring, and you're not going to teach it this spring, but next spring. And you're going to be teaching church growth this spring, which is equally important as well. So be aware of that. We'd love to have you. That's where we really get into it and mix it up a little bit. And Let's talk for just a moment, if you would, Ryan, about how did you become interested in church planting? What got you to thinking about this?
Sure. Well, I got saved when I was 19, 18 or 19. And then a couple years after that is when I felt called to ministry. But then when I began to look out on the landscape of churches, when I looked at the churches, I thought these churches wouldn't reach who I was. And I'm not trying to say things bad about current churches that are. I'm just trying to say that I know who I was, and a lot of circumstances, I mean, Christ completely just grabbed me up and rescued me. But who I was wasn't someone who would have stepped foot in any of these churches. And I was like, okay, I feel called to ministry, but I don't feel like any of these churches would have found me. And so I just began to envision a church that would just engage culture and just saturate a culture with the gospel. And about that time, I got word of some church planting networks I've gotten involved with, and they have great resources. I took his church planting class, and just to see what these plants are doing. And I'm not trying to be a prophet, but when I see these movements of church, there's many organizations out there that are starting to plant churches. And when I see these movements, I see that for my generation, these are the kinds of churches that are going to reach people like who I was. Most of the lost community is not going to step foot in your traditional church or your contemporary church. But what the lost people need is a church that's just going to saturate the culture with the gospel. And I see that the churches I visited that have planted are just sold out for the gospel in that community, in that culture. And I see a huge movement coming, and that's what gives me hope for our country and for others. So,
to just support what Ryan is saying, I brought with me a copy of The Advocate. This is a little periodical that comes out in Lakewood and East Dallas, which is not very far from here. And interestingly enough, I love to read this because it gets into that community, and I'm a part of that community. And right on the cover this time says, "Losing our religion, will dwindling attendance and tired ideas close the doors on neighborhood congregations?" And the opinion is yes. The gentleman that is the editor here starts off right away, and he talks about a church that he was a part of and how it died and what it was like to go through that death. I think it was Trinity Lutheran. And maybe some of you drive down Gaston and go by that church. I can remember on the marquee outside, they said goodbye. You know, that was the end. And gosh, it just does something to you. And it did to him, and he tells the story. And then he goes on and he talks about the number of churches in the area. Some are growing, but the majority are dying, and how sad that is. I'm talking about opportunities in the area. Some of our students are actually involved in church planting. Mike, would you like to comment? You were sharing a little bit earlier with me.
Sure, yeah. Well, I don't think any one of us should overlook the tremendous impact we can have as students in church planting while we are students. Peter Wagner has said, "The greatest evangelistic strategy on the face of the earth is church planting," and then he adds to that, "The most effective church planters are actually seminary students." So people like Bill Hybels, for example, just stretched out his education at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School to about 9 years or more while he was founding Willow Creek. But, I mean, that was done with one of his buddies while they were students, and it's amazing to see where that's gone. Right now, among a number of other opportunities, Subhash and Sean Varghese are starting a church which really will be a pan-Asian church, probably. It is an emerging kind of a church. And one of my other students, another second-generation Indian, Gerald Kuravakal, and his wife Lisa, and Stanley Matthews, all of them are Indian. But he was reporting on being there just a Sunday or so ago, and as they sang, although all of the services are in English, because these are second generation Indians for the most part, they also still know indigenous languages from India, and they were able to sing God's praises in five different languages right over here in Valley Ranch. And, you know, the student was commenting on how incredibly moving, you know, that was. I think that emphasizes another aspect of what's going on in church planting, and that is there's a lot of church development and new church establishment among the immigrant population and the second generation of immigrants right in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and across America. So, you know, as you think about what the possibilities are, myself, when I went to seminary, I just couldn't sit still in church because I had already been preaching in prisons for about 2.5 years previous to that, and so being active every Sunday made it close to impossible to sit still in church on Sunday when I went away to seminary. So I got a little church on the south side of Chicago, a little group of about 35 people meeting in two storefronts. And by the time I graduated, that had only grown to about 65, but we had begun negotiations to buy a Russian Orthodox church nearby because we could see that we were growing. Well, I went on from there after 3 years. My wife and I worked in Venezuela. But that little church, you know, struggled for a bit, and then a real man of God, Mark Jobe, got a hold of that, and that today is New Life Church in Chicago. And New Life has about 14 different congregations with close to 4,000 people in it. You know, so one of the greatest examples of urban and to quite some extent multicultural ministries in the Chicagoland area. So, you know, these things start out, you don't know where they're going to go. This is the marvelous thing to me about church planting. It's like Jesus' job, not just yours. And you raise the flag up the flagpole, and Jesus is ready to go with it. He said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So, you know, some of these opportunities here in this country, down in Venezuela, and these are all flourishing today, not because I'm a great church planter, but because God's a great God. This is Jesus. This is what Jesus' agenda is all about, and he blesses it when you get on board with it.
Thank you, Mike. I, too, had the privilege of planting a church before I came to seminary as a student. I think that experience helped me to sense the need for coming to seminary, but it was an amazing experience how God works. We were going to a Bible church in the Miami, Florida area, and that church, the pastor went off in a charismatic direction, a kind of direction that we weren't comfortable with. He was meeting with a prophetess and that type of thing. Meanwhile, I'd been teaching a Friday night Bible study that had become somewhat evangelistic, and so a lot of the people in the church moved in our direction. And we said, why don't we start meeting Sunday morning, get together and find a church where we would go? Well, one thing led to another. We started growing. And then two young ladies in the church came one morning, and they had invited some friends, and they introduced me as their pastor. And it suddenly dawned on me. I was so green, so naive. I had no idea what God was doing. And then I began to realize what he was doing. And that has marked me to this day. Lance, you also, tell us a little bit about how you got into church planting and what God. Now, Lance spoke on Wednesday, but not everybody was here Wednesday. So if you'd tell us a little bit about that.
Church planting, I came to Dallas Seminary with the purpose of planting a church. We had a group in Houston. We had prayed together. We had seen a need in the area for a Bible teaching church. I'd grown up Southern Baptist. Grew up, and that's not a slam on all Southern Baptists at all, because I love Southern Baptists. Still consider myself a Southern Baptist, but noticed with many Southern Baptists that we knew, said they knew Christ and didn't live the lifestyle and really didn't know Christ. And all you had to do was sit down and ask them, tell me about who Jesus is. And it was depressing to hear the answers. If it wasn't so sad, it would have been funny. And anyway, we started going around this new neighborhood, and we were talking to people. We were going door to door, one man in particular. And there's just a lot of confusion, a lot of confusion. A lot of people know who Jesus is. Some folks, the only thing they know about him is Jesus in a punchline or a curse word, and that's when you know you're called to ministry, at least one of the pieces of the puzzle, as it were, is that either makes you laugh or it upsets you. And so we began to pray for that area. A buddy of mine and I, one day, I got down on our knees and said, let's stop talking about this and let's do it. And my wife and I just recently moved to Dallas, and you know, he said, why don't you start at Dallas Seminary? And I laughed. My wife was pregnant. We didn't have any money, and there was no way that could happen, and I'm sure many of you are in that position or know what I'm talking about. But God provided, and it's an amazing story. I won't bore you with it. It's an amazing story, though. But the whole time my wife and I are in Dallas, our group, four buddies of mine, their wives, began this Sunday school class. And they started, everyone that came to the Sunday school class in our mother church, which was in our area. They said, look, this Sunday school class, we're going through, you know, any topic that normal Sunday school classes go through, Bible, books of the Bible, topics and the like. This is en route to a church plant. There's a gentleman we know, and some of them knew me. He's at Dallas Seminary, and prayerfully, when he comes back in 4 years, we'll start a church with this group. And so when I came back, we did that, and we went into that neighborhood. We are in that neighborhood. We are unique, and really, we haven't reinvented the wheel. It's the church. We have a building. We sing songs of praise. Some are hymns. Some are modern-day songs. And we open God's Word and watch the people come in. But the need was there. We saw it, and we prayed about meeting it. And the reason we did it wasn't so that I could become a preacher, per se. Some of it was that. But the reason was that the community was dying, and it still is. And we live in an upper-middle-class neighborhood that would be, I think, very akin to living in any country in the world where people don't know Christ. The saddest part about it is that they're wealthy, and they think they know Jesus. My neighbor, a couple, when we first started the church, came over. We were sitting out in some block party, and he said, your church is probably doing great. Most of the people here are Republicans. And that was a... I got into the mind, and I laughed at him, but he was serious. Well, if you're Republican, then you must be Christian. And that is that's a diagnosis of what people think Christianity is. And you start the church, people come in, hey, we like this. And what we found is we found a lot of people that came in who have now become Christian, who thought they were. And I've got a file drawer filled with testimonies, because you have to turn your testimony in to be a member. We want to read it. We want to know what you think. There's some in that file that tell me what their testimony is. I've known God, I love Jesus, went to church, was baptized, and that's what they think a testimony is. Those are the people we know that we need to minister to. And others who were there after having been here for a while say things like, you know what, I grew up in the church, grew up in the Methodist church, Baptist church, Catholic church. I mean, more than half of our congregation are ex-Catholics. But they say the same thing. We thought we knew Christ until we really started to hear what Christ says in the Bible. And so that was the need. And I'm not going to say we met it. We are meeting it. Lord willing, we will continue to do so.
Thanks, Lance. Before I open it up for your questions of us, I have a question of you. Is there anyone here this morning from the Baltimore area? I'm curious. Anyone here from the Baltimore area? Okay, I see a few hands that are up. You remember some of you that were here for all the chapels, I can't remember which one, I think it was maybe the one that Lance spoke at. I mentioned that a number of you are going into church planting, you just don't know it yet. And many of you laughed, and I laughed, but I wasn't exactly laughing on the inside. And here's an illustration why. I just got this email yesterday from one of our grads, Aaron Pankey, who is in that part of Baltimore, near Baltimore. He graduated from here in 1999, and they want to plant a church in the Baltimore, Maryland area in the fall of 2009. Now, this is great when you've got a parent church here willing to get involved, because that means they're going to cover a lot of the funding, and they're going to help you get involved and get that thing started. And it might be that a few of you that are from that area, or some of you that might be interested in that area, this could be God's way of getting your attention, because this is typically how it happens. A lot of you will graduate and you'll move out into ministry, and all of a sudden somebody will contact you, perhaps from back home or a seminary mate or someone like that. And they'll tell you, they'll talk about this opportunity, and would you be interested in that? And most people will tell me, well, I never thought about that before. So we're trying to get you to think about that now. And again, if you're interested in Baltimore, the Baltimore area, please come up and take this and respond to Aaron, because he's looking for some church planters in that area. Now, I'd like to turn it over to you. I suspect this past week our speakers have raised a number of different questions, and that's what we're here for. Feel free to direct a question to any one of us or to the group of us, and we'll sort it out and figure out who might respond to that. Yes?
How do we respond when a church plant fails?
Okay. Well, I mentioned earlier that you know, Jesus has said, I will, and I think he's saying, I will be building, I will keep on building my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So it sounds like no church plant will fail. But I think they can stumble, though. And, you know, I've been in the situation of starting a church which, you know, actually came apart at the seams. And a Portuguese couple came to me and they said, listen, Mike, don't be discouraged. We've been a part of other church plants. These are lay people talking. You get a lot of instruction and encouragement from lay people that never went to seminary. And they said, listen, Mike, we've been a part of several church plants around this country, and believe me, this happens all the time. So don't be discouraged. Just hang in. You know, this is going to take off. And so, and they were right. It did. And so I think we don't always see church plants that fail. You see them stumbling along the way to being fully birthed, shall we say. So even in the case where there's been, you know, severe loss in a church planting situation because something's gone radically wrong, those people frequently do then align themselves with other churches, so you don't have the loss of the people or to the body of Christ itself. But there can be some disappointments like this.
Yeah, churches do fail, and you need to realize that. And church planting is very entrepreneurial, and into any entrepreneurial involvement or organization like that, you're going to get failures. I found one of the major reasons why I've seen churches that have failed, church plants that have failed, is a lack of vision. They've not cast the vision up front, or they've not clearly cast the vision so that initial team, that core group that was involved in the church plant, maybe 2 or 3 years later, their response will be, well, we didn't think it was going to be like this, or we were looking for something else, and then they'll move on. I see that a lot out there. But again, the more you know what you're doing up front, the less likely it is that you will fail. And again, I think the best way to do church planting is as much as possible if you can have another church that will sponsor you. I very rarely see failures when you go that way, because you've got that mother church, that parent church there to encourage, to rebuke if necessary. And so there's certain practices that it won't guarantee that you won't fail, but it'll help limit the number of failures that are out there. We'll start over here, question over here, and then we'll move over here.
What are some characteristics for someone who's looking at church planning, and for myself, who's kind of really just starting to consider it as a viable option, what are some characteristics to look for that you know, that the Lord's calling you that direction? And my other question is, I've noticed in just talking to different people.
What are the characteristics that a church planter might have or you might have to know if you should move in that direction? Could we answer that first, and then we'll give you your second question?
I can only speak for myself. As I said, a need, you see a need, and you think you can meet it. There's some arrogance involved. I'll be honest with you. You think you can meet it. I would not be a pastor if I didn't think I could do it. I told the gentleman the other day in the brown bag lunch after chapel that I went into my Sunday school class and asked him, do you think I can be a preacher? Can I be a pastor? Would you follow me as a pastor? And I was, you know, you have to be ready for the worst of answers. But those answers compelled me and were another piece of the puzzle. I know it's my second time to use that example, but what they said, what they wrote, yes, Lance, you've got this. You really stink at this, and maybe you can fix that. And listen to people. Ask them what they think of you, and ask God. That's the way God's going to tell you. Before I came to seminary, I got a master's degree in counseling and thought I was going to be a counselor, and yet I was still a teacher in Sunday school, and I had three people within the course of 10 days tell me, you have missed your calling. You've missed your calling. On the third time, I thought, well, maybe I ought to listen to these people. So ask God to tell you, and listen to the people. Listen to what they say. Listen to your professors. I mean, I had professors telling me that. So if you think it's there, be very aware of what people are telling you, and ask them point blank, do you think I am? Be ready for no also.
My second question is, it seems that there's been a big shift in the old method of church planting, which is by groups of two. I can think of a couple groups like Fellowship Bible in Arkansas, which really focuses on two people planting a church, as opposed to what seems like a different method, the Acts 29 Network, which is focused on one person. And has there been a big shift in church planting, is my question. And what do you think about that?
Yes, there is. It's very interesting. I see it oftentimes connected to generations. The builder generation had a particular approach. The boomers had a particular approach. And now with next generation, there are different emphases and different approaches. Now, I'll give you an example. I'll ask a lot of times, I'll ask church planters or just students in my regular classes, leadership classes, and PM department. I'll ask them, if the church got no bigger than 100, would you consider yourself a failure? And the ones who say yes are usually boomers or those that have been influenced by the boomer generation, so people like Rick Warren and Bill Hybels, because that's what they did and that's what they consider success. But I would say next generation or millennials or whatever you want to call them don't look at that at all. They say, oh, yes, that would definitely be a success. And so that affects how you do church planting. For example, Rick Warren has planted a ton of churches out there, but they like to start off as big as they can get right up front. And others don't do that. Others will start with a smaller core group and begin to build it. So there are all kinds of different ways. I would argue, and I teach this, that is, you want to go through a process. There are all kinds of different models of churches. And I think Rick himself said it takes all kinds of churches to reach all kinds of people. What he's saying is it takes all kinds of models. And that's what you've heard here in chapel this week, some of the models that are out there. But there is a process that I think all churches work through. It basically has to do with core values, mission, vision, and your strategy. And once you work through those, you'll come up with a church that is endemic to who you are, where you are. So there are some stable things that you work through. So I hope that helps you. Back to your former question, some people would say, are you called? And they talk about a call to ministry. And I'm not sure how clear that is in scriptures. I like to say, look at how God has wired you. That might give you an idea. And very commonly in church planters, I see them with the gift of evangelism, a gift of communication, some kind of speaking gift, and a gift of leadership. That's very common out there. So I would say if you have gifting in those areas, you may want to think about it. But again, just as soon as I say that, a church planter comes along that doesn't have those particular gifts. And it makes me a liar in a sense. So I think it gets back to maybe a passion element. And sometimes you can tie that into call possibly. What is God doing in your heart? Do you feel a passion to reach out to a community? And often church planting is one of the best ways to do that. So hopefully that will help you. Question over here.
Yeah, I know you can't be exhaustive, but can you outline some type of steps towards being financially independent after you church plant? I mean, I imagine sweaty palms the first time I need to give a sermon on tithing or something. So just a couple of steps maybe?
Well, usually, again, when you address the financial area, finances you would think would be a problem, but they don't necessarily have to be a problem. Again, if you have a sponsoring church, they will help you out a lot with the finances. A while back, I'd say about maybe 15, 20 years ago, there wasn't as much of an emphasis out there on church planting because the church seemed to be doing fairly well. Well, all that has changed, as this article in The Advocate mentions, especially in North America. And now a lot of the denominational groups who are fighting for their lives are coming on campus, they're coming around, they're looking for church planters, and they're willing to put their pocketbooks behind that. So I don't let finances scare you away from church planting. Now, you also mentioned something about addressing finances. My research, my work in this area, some of my students here, we just got through talking about this in class. What we've discovered is that it's not that hard to raise funding. And the research says that it probably once a month, every year you need to address the issue of finances. So you need to have a theology of finances or stewardship, and then focusing in on that, what does that say about giving? And there's a way to approach this in the church where people will discover what God expects from them in those areas and they begin to give. So while it would seem like that would be a huge issue up front, it's really not that big an issue. And what really ticks me off sometimes is the fact that some of you let that keep you from going into missions. You know, we need to define missions. I think mission starts right at our own front door. But a lot of people, because of the financial issues, won't go into missions. And it's just, it's not that big an issue. It's not as big an issue as you might think. Yes?
How do you make the call or the decision to plant a new church versus trying to reform an already established church that's maybe dying or not fulfilling the Great Commission anymore? How do you make that judgment?
A quick statement, and I think it comes to Mike's mind, having both been exposed to Peter Wagner. He said it's the difference between having babies and trying to raise the dead. So think about that. That's the difference. I do both. I have a consulting ministry that takes me out on the weekends, and I go in and work with struggling churches. And if I had it to do all over again, I would plant. I really would, because there's a freshness, there's a vigor. When you go into an established church, there are a lot of people who are just pursuing the status quo. And much of what I do is I'm calling them back to the Scriptures. What are you supposed to be doing as a church? Well, the answer to that's the Great Commission. Well, somehow along the way, they've all strayed from that. But you've got people that fight you in the process. You got to try to get people on board. And some of you are wired to do that. And I think that's a ministry in itself. But church planting is the other answer. And there, you don't enter into someone else's baggage. You create your own baggage. Anybody else want to address that? Michael?
Yeah, Lyle Schaller, who writes a lot for the Methodists on the matter of church establishment growth and all the rest of it, wrote a book over in the library here called Turnaround Churches. Actually, his opening says Dr. Malfers has just mentioned, namely that it is kind of hard to turn around a dying church. But then he goes right ahead and gives you about six or seven chapters of churches that did do it. And so it really is it is possible to turn around a church. A model in Chicago with this New Life Church that I mentioned is that, you know, they've been so successful in kind of gritty urban situations that churches that are dying in their area have come to them and said, please take us over. They might be down to 75 or 50 members, whereas they had 500 members back in the 60s or 1,000 members back in the 60s. But it's only where the final group of people are ready to say, we don't know what to do with this community, but if you could help us, we'll stand with you while you do what you know what to do about this community. And so they've gone in there and said, look, this is going to be a lot different than what you folks are used to. Obviously, what you do doesn't work. And that's okay. It's just that it did work at one point, now it doesn't. If you're ready to trust us and realize that we want to see people come to know Jesus Christ and really be built up in the faith and be great stewards and witnesses for Jesus Christ, that's what we want to do. If you can put up with all of the strange stuff you're going to see us doing on faith that is our goal, then we're okay. But if you want us to come in and help you to continue to do what you were already doing, we won't even start. And so on that note and with that agreement, they've taken over three or four urban churches, and they've just jumped right back up into the 500 and 600 category now that they reach a little bit more multicultural community, young urban professionals, or really gritty community full of gangbangers and druggies. What they're doing is being blessed by God, and they are serious about this matter of revitalizing Chicago. So, you know, it's done. You know, it is possible to turn churches around. You know, and this is the condition. I've listened to other people who have been involved in major outreaches like this, and they've said it's only where the people are ready to say, we don't know what to do, almost like Jehoshaphat. Lord, we don't know what to do, but our eyes are upon you. If they're ready to do something new, then the situation will be saved, but not if they keep doing the same thing.
Just one thought, and then I'm going to close this out. And if you have a question, please come up afterwards and ask it. But if you feel right now that God is leading you into the pastoral ministry, you've basically got one of two options: to go into an established church that more than likely is in decline or struggling, or church planting. Think about that for just a moment. The Willow Creeks and the Saddlebacks, which are celebrated as being great churches, there are small churches that are great churches as well. But they're not going to be necessarily waiting for you to graduate to go replace Bill Hybels or any of these people. The churches that are usually out there are churches that are struggling, and they're looking to you to come in and help them out. Or the other option is church planting. So just want to close with that thought. Our challenge to you is consider church planting. Feel free to come and talk to us about it. We'd love to talk with you. There are a number of students on campus that are involved in that now. There's some, as Mike has commented on earlier, that are involved in church planting or a part of that. So we want to make ourselves available to you. If you have any other questions, we'll stay around for a few moments to answer those questions. Meanwhile, let me close in prayer. Father, I thank you for the wonderful privilege of being here at Dallas Seminary. And it's just exciting to all of us to see our students, young people who want to make a difference for Jesus Christ. And we realize that there are many ways that we can accomplish that. And one is church planting. And we know that you're going to raise up a number of people here and put them in church planting. And often those opportunities come along after graduation. So we do pray that we might have some role in that, some part, although it may be small, in encouraging that and casting a vision for that, that those who are here on campus would begin to think about that and to pray about that. And we'll give you the praise and the glory in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.